Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Wednesday, August 19th. The show is called Higher IQ, and it occurred to me that I've actually never done an episode about what IQ means. I've used the name for months now without fully understanding the thing that I've named the show after, so figured it was time. And the first thing I learned is that the guy who invented the intelligent quotient or IQ test explicitly said that it shouldn't be used to measure anyone's intelligence. He created it for a completely different purpose and actually warned against using it to rank people. He even called the idea of reducing intelligence to a single number a brutal pessimism. And then he watched the world do exactly what he said not to do, which must be a pretty painful experience. But that IQ test became the foundation for the SAT and the ACT, which determine which college you get into, which then shapes the trajectory of your career, which means a test that was never designed to measure intelligence is quietly influencing millions of people's lives every year. All right, let's get started with this episode. In 1904, the French government asked a psychologist named Alfred Binet to develop a way to identify school children who were struggling and needed extra help. That's all it was. A tool for school teachers to figure out which students needed more support, not a way to rank kids or measure innate ability. Binet went on to build a series of tasks that then tested memory, attention, and problem solving. And then he compared each child's performance to what was typical for their age. He called it, quote-unquote, mental age. So a 10-year-old performing like a typical 12-year-old had a mental age of 12, which is good. Binet was clear about the limits of what he built. He said that intelligence was too complex to capture in a single number. He said the score could be improved with practice and better education, and he specifically warned that using the test to label children as permanently smart or not smart would be, in his words, a brutal pessimism that would damage their futures. He died in 1911, and within 5 years, an American psychologist named Lewis Terman at Stanford took Binet's test and renamed it the Stanford-Binet Intelligence Scale, introduced the IQ score formula, and did everything that Binet warned against. Terman believed that intelligence was heritable and fixed, and he used IQ scores to sort people into categories that determined what kind of education and career that they deserved. Through the 1920s and 30s, IQ tests were used to justify the Immigration Act of 1924, which restricted entry to the U.S. from Southern and Eastern Europe based partly on the claim that those populations scored lower on intelligence tests. They were also used to support forced sterilization programs in over 30 states, where people deemed feeble-minded based on their test scores were sterilized without meaningful consent. That is insane. The test that was built to help struggling French school children became a tool for deciding who was allowed into the country and who was allowed to have children. Okay, so if IQ tests aren't a great measure of intelligence, what does science say about why some people seem to process things faster or solve problems more easily than others? There is real research on this, and some of the findings are surprising. One of the most consistent results in neuroscience is something called neural efficiency. It's essentially that people who score higher on cognitive tests actually use less brain energy when solving problems, not more. Their neural pathways are more streamlined, so the brain does the same work with fewer resources. It's not that their brains are working harder, it's that they're working more efficiently, like a newer computer that runs cooler while processing faster. Brain size actually matters a lot less than people assume. I always had a big head, so people were like, oh, are you intelligent? Well, I like to think I am, but what matters more is called white matter connectivity. This white matter connectivity is the wiring between different brain regions. How quickly and efficiently different parts of your brain communicate with each other correlates more strongly with processing speed and reasoning ability than any size of the individual region. So two people can have similarly sized brains, but very different cognitive profiles because the connections between the regions are structured differently. Does that make sense? And the genetic component is very real. Twin studies have consistently shown that genetics account for about 50 to 80% of the variation in IQ scores. Identical twins raised apart in completely different environments with different families and different schools end up with remarkably similar IQ scores. Kind of wild, huh? So there is a biological foundation that some people are born with it, and pretending otherwise isn't honest. but the other 20 to 50% is environment, education, nutrition, and exposure to complex thinking, which is a massive variable that the IQ number alone can separate from the genetic piece. This is actually where the Flynn effect comes in. Researcher James Flynn discovered that IQ scores have been rising by about 3 points per decade throughout the 20th century, consistently, across every country where data exists. The average American today would score in the top percentiles on a test from the 1930s. Human brains didn't evolve in 100 years, but the conditions that people grew up in got better. Better nutrition, more education, and more exposure to abstract reasoning. The scores went up because the environment improved, which is exactly what Binet said in 1905 when he warned that treating the numbers as fixed was wrong. Okay, now let's talk about some test scores. The SAT was originally derived from an Army IQ test used to sort military recruits during World War I. The connection between IQ tests and college entrance exams isn't a loose analogy. It's a direct lineage. And the College Board's own data shows that students from families earning over $200K per year score an average of 388 points higher on the SAT than students from families earning under $20,000. The tests measure something, but separating raw ability from the environment that shaped it is a lot harder than a single score suggests. Angela Duckworth at the University of Pennsylvania found that among students at an elite university, those with higher SAT scores actually reported slightly less grit, while grittier students earned higher GPAs even after controlling for test scores. In a separate study of 8th graders, self-control predicted grades twice as strongly as IQ. The willingness to keep working at something difficult, to persist through frustration and maintain effort over long periods of time, well, that was a much better predictor of academic success than raw cognitive ability. And it's a trait that no standardized test can measure. Carolyn Dweck, who's one of my favorite researchers, she's at Stanford, found something very similar. Students who were praised for being smart after a test actually performed worse on the next one because they avoided harder challenges to protect the label, while students praised for working hard sought out problems because they valued the effort over the identity. So this one's for you for a second. Next time you think about yourself or want to praise yourself, ask if you'd rather think of yourself as smart or as hardworking, because it actually might change the way you develop. Okay, and now let's move on to the last topic here, which I'm sure a lot of people are asking, which is, does any of this translate to how much money I can make? Well, there is a correlation between IQ and income, but it's a lot weaker than you might imagine. IQ accounts for roughly 10 to 15% of the variation in how much someone earns. Family wealth, personality traits like conscientiousness and social connections all predict income independently of IQ, and in some studies, they actually predict it much more strongly. And above an IQ of about 120, additional points don't really correlate with additional earnings at all. It's a threshold, not a ladder, meaning you need to be smart enough to do the basic work, but beyond that, the things that determine how far you go have almost nothing to do with the test score. And this is where I think the whole framework needs to be reconsidered, because ChatGPT scores above 120 on most IQ tests. A machine with no consciousness, no lived experience, and no common sense can outscore most humans on the test that's supposed to measure intelligence. Well, here's my question. If AI can beat the test, then whatever the test measures, pattern recognition, logical reasoning, data analysis, it's not really uniquely a human intelligence. It's the stuff that machines can replicate, right? So what AI can't do is be creative in the way humans are, ask a question that nobody has thought to ask, connect ideas that don't obviously belong together, feeling something and turning that feeling into a solution. So question for you all, with AI becoming smarter, or I guess IQ standards smarter, so high IQ test score, do we think we're going to need a different test to measure human intelligence, or should we keep competing against robots? That's for you to decide. I personally don't think that's the right approach. I would like to see something that can measure those qualities I just talked about. Human connection, consciousness, understanding how to turn things into solutions. I think what I'm getting at is there needs to be a better way to separate human intelligence from machine intelligence. Anyway, the show is called Higher IQ, and I'm going to keep the name because I like it, and I've already bought the domain name. I'm not changing it again. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.